Leiben and Teresa Rayford. KBOO is your independent media resource. You'll want to join us all day long. Stay with us and join KBOO in a very real way by becoming a member at 503. I'm sorry. Oh my goodness.
This
the bell, it's taken everything out of my head. 877-500-5266. I want to thank David Corton for joining us again for a wonderfully insightful and inciting conversation.
Thank you, Ray, our wonderful engineer.
And thank you, Teresa, our amazing pitch.
You're welcome, comrade.
And thanks to you, dear listeners, for your ears, your hearts, and your financial support to keep us going. 877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy, located 3957 North Mississippi Avenue, and serving classic American breakfasts and hearty comfort food lunches. Lunch was provided by Produce Row Cafe, located 204 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. This long-standing gastropub specializes in pairing beer and whiskey with American eats. Dinner was provided by Blackbird Pizza, located 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland, and featuring build-your-own pies, vegan options, creative cocktails, plus a game room and late hours. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO's daily prize drawing rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the daily prize drawing. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance for winning. The daily prize drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations, void where prohibited or restricted by law or regulations. To enter, call 877-500-5266 between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provide your name, complete address with zip code, date of birth, and day/evening phone numbers with area code. Only one entry per person per household will be accepted each day. Winner will be determined in a random drawing following the announcement of that day's prize after 10 p.m. Winner may be notified by telephone following the drawing. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions, and for the name of the winner, go to kboo.fm/holiday prize. And thank you.
And thank you, Becky Myers. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in to KBOO Portland this morning. It's 9:02 and time for Pacific Underground, this month featuring Justin Chin, speaking on his experiences living in a small town in Eastern Oregon, and what it's like to build community in such a place where one might not expect to find it. Here it is.
Hey, you're listening to Pacific Underground, the show made for and by the Pacific Islander and Asian American community. I'm one of your hosts this week, Jenna, and I am joined in studio here by Kat.
Hi, Jenna.
I know that you are new to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been out to Eastern Oregon yet?
I have not.
Ooh, that is a trip.
Is it?
Yeah, and not just like a road trip because it takes a few hours to get out to anywhere, but it is... If you've only ever lived in Portland, it is a whole other experience.
I mean, there's large pockets of Portland that I have yet to see.
And those would shock you a little bit. But let me just say, Eastern Oregon. Ooh,
I've heard things.
Yeah, it's a desert, first of all. Like, compared to, like, you know, we think of Portland and, you know, the Cascades, it's everything super green and super lush. And then you cross over the Cascades, and it becomes this, like, vast, open, like, desert sage plain, and it becomes, well, noticeably whiter. Let's just put it that way. I mean, Portland is like, we call it the whitest city in America. I don't know what that says about Eastern Oregon.
I have really not seen a whole lot of Oregon, but I do know that 5% of the state's population is API.
Yeah, and most people would probably think that 5% like is solely in Portland, but when you actually go out to Eastern Oregon, you'll find that there are these pockets of like these sizable API communities. Today, we are going to be featuring an interview with Pacific Underground producer Tabitha speaking to Justin Chin. Justin Chin is the Career Services Director at Eastern Oregon University in La Grande, Oregon, which, Kat, I'll let you know, is like way Eastern Oregon. People say La Grande, it's like, whoa. And so he spoke to Tabitha about what it's like to be someone who, you know, we think could be super otherized by being out in Eastern Oregon, but has managed to find ways to have community and connection. Hey, you're listening to Pacific Underground, the show made for and by the Pacific Islander and Asian American community. I'm one of your hosts this week, Jenna, and I am joined in studio here by Kat.
Hi, Jenna.
I know that you are new to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been out to Eastern Oregon yet?
I have not.
Ooh, that is a trip.
Is it?
Yeah, and not just like a road trip because it takes a few hours to get out to anywhere, but it is... If you've only ever lived in Portland, it is a whole other experience.
I mean, there's large pockets of Portland that I have yet to see. Yeah.
And those would shock you a little bit. But let me just say, Eastern Oregon.
Ooh. I've heard things.
Yeah, it's a desert, first of all. Like, compared to, like, you know, we think of Portland and, you know, the Cascades, it's everything super green and super lush. And then you cross over the Cascades, and it becomes this, like, vast, open, like, desert, sage, plain. And it becomes, well, noticeably whiter. Let's just put it that way. I mean, Portland is, like, we call it the whitest city in America. I don't know what that says about Eastern Oregon.
I have really not seen a whole lot of Oregon, but I do know that 5% of the state's population is API.
Yeah, and most people would probably think that 5% like it's solely in Portland, but when you actually go out to Eastern Oregon, you'll find that there are these pockets of like these sizable API communities. Today, we are going to be featuring an interview with Pacific Underground producer Tabitha speaking to Justin Chin. Justin Chin is the Career Services Director at Eastern Oregon University in La Grande, Oregon, which, Kat, I'll let you know, is like way Eastern Oregon. People say La Grande, it's like, whoa. And so he spoke to Tabitha about what it's like to be someone who, you know, we think could be super otherized by being out in Eastern Oregon, but has managed to find ways to have community and connection.
Welcome, Justin Chin. Thanks for joining us on Pacific Underground.
Thank you for having me, Tabitha. Really looking forward to this conversation.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Born and raised in Dallas, Oregon, so that's 15 minutes west of Salem, son of immigrant parents who did the typical Chinese American thing in the 70s and 80s. They owned a Chinese restaurant in rural America. My background, grew up with my three brothers and two half-sisters in quite rural America in the 80s. I remember my parents saying to my brothers and I, as we were in middle school, having this kind of back of the car conversation. It was, do any of you want to inherit the restaurant? And then the car got silent. You know, our parents were happy with that decision in their own regards and encouraged us to pursue dreams outside of the family restaurant, which was probably the best thing for my brothers and I as possible can be.
I thought it really interesting when you said that you were from Dallas, because I'm from Salem, and I'm sure if we ever did like a spider web or something, we'd probably find our family had a lot of intersection.
Growing up Asian American in the Willamette Valley is always interesting to see the intersectionality and how many places our families all touch. So for my parents, it's when my dad passed away when I was in high school, you know, I really didn't expect it to be a very large service at all. I expected it to be immediate family from California that had come up or what have you not. But when the service finally happened, there was this large outpouring of Chinese Americans and Filipino Americans, Japanese Americans, Korean Americans that had touched my family's life in some small way, whether it was a produce driver from Old Chinatown or the Louie family from Old Chinatown coming down to pay their respect to my family. And, you know, it was very powerful. I'm almost starting to tear up a little bit, Tabitha, when I talk about that. So when I think about the valley, the Willamette Valley, I'm pretty sure, Tabitha, if we were to sit down with a piece of butcher paper and lay it out, we would find this was how we are connected, and this is who we are connected by.
Yeah, yeah. What led you to Eastern Oregon University?
I'm going to give you two answers to this. I'll give you the answer that is very, very, very by the numbers, and I'll give you the one that is shrouded in historical fiction and magic realism, the by-the-number truths. It was a position came open at Eastern Oregon University, and I was working for, prior to this, Lynn Benton Community College, going from one Department of Labor grant to another Department of Labor grant. So my first position at Lynn Benton was on the CASE grant. And as that grant faded out, I transitioned into another Department of Labor grant, working with developing, launching, what was it? It was like the iLearn grant. So the iLearn grant was a grant that was really built to develop and facilitate online education that fit into the lives of working adults. And as that started to phase out, the position at Eastern Oregon came open, really kind of highlighted by a colleague of mine who worked at Blue Mountain Community College in Pendleton. Applied for the position, knowing that I loved career services, but not knowing the whole ramifications of picking up and moving to a part of Oregon that I had only passed through less than a handful of time.
Yeah, I'm from Oregon, and I've never been to La Grande.
When I told a lot of my friends that I took a position at Eastern Oregon University, two natural responses. The first one was, oh, that's cool. Bend isn't really that bad. It's only 2.5 hours from Salem. It's like, no, 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 no. La Grande is Bend plus a little bit more, like what, maybe half hour? It's like, no, keep going.
Yeah.
And they're like, really, how far is La Grande from Salem? And so.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, radio made by you and for all of us. I'm Jenna, and I'm here to remind you that your support makes KBOO happen. So give us a call at 877-500-5266 right now to become a member of KBOO today. You are listening to Pacific Underground. We have a goal. Hey, what's our goal for this hour? Oh, look at that. It's a little early in the morning for all of us. So, but you know what? If you become a member of KBOO, while we're waiting to hear what our goal is for today, while our today's drawing is for $400 worth of your pick of thank you gifts from the KBOO Thank You Gift Cabinet, which includes books, CDs, t-shirts, mugs, and other KBOO merchandise. So if you call us at 877-500-5266, then you will be entered into that daily drawing. Oh, hey, look, we got some thank yous to give. We want to give a thank you to Nancy from Portland. She's renewing her membership. Thank you so much, Nancy, for continuing your support of KBOO Community Radio, along with Susan from White Salmon, who is also renewing. How great is that? People who see their value, you know, see the value of KBOO for themselves and continue their support. We have, look at that. We got our goal in for this hour. We have $300 goal. Well, we don't actually have it in yet. We need you to call in and tell us how much you like KBOO, how much you need KBOO. Because it's a great station. So give us a call, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm. It only takes a couple minutes to become a member. And, you know, let me give a little thinking about, like, why KBOO matters to you. Well, Pacific Underground, to me, is a perfect example of why KBOO is so important to our community, because you're not going to hear any a show like Pacific Ground on any other radio station. We are literally the only show for the Asian Pacific Islander community that is solely dedicated to that community here on the West Coast on the radio, because that's what KBOO finds important. KBOO says, hey, let's actually amplify the voices of those who don't ever get a chance to have a voice, to have their stories told. And that's what matters to you. That's why you're listening. You find this type of programming compelling. You say, hey, I want to hear from the community. I want to hear people's stories and how they exist in the same spaces as me. I mean, it's powerful programming. You appreciate that. So give us a call, 877-500-5266, and show your support of lifting up those voices that you love to hear. Now we're going to get back to Pacific Underground.
How does La Grande compare to other places you have lived in Oregon?
Very similar in a lot of ways. La Grande is about 13,500. The town that I was born and raised in, Dallas, I think we are just a hair under 17,000. But I've also lived in Albany, Oregon. I've lived in Corvallis, Oregon. For a little bit of time, lived in Spokane, Washington. So I always like to compare La Grande to where I was at the longest, which is Dallas. And so when I think about the Willamette Valley, Dallas especially, size-wise, very similar in a lot of ways. Access-wise, day and night. I was looking at some demographics just the other week. So it was a breakdown of population. When I was looking at the map, Dallas, Oregon, and a good chunk of the Mid-Valley, it's considered rural Oregon. Average of 6 inhabitants every square mile. It's really based off of access to immediate health care and access to education. And so when I look at the Mid-Valley, you know, even being in Salem to Dallas, it's 20 minutes on a bad day to hop the bridge over Highway 99 into Salem to go to a hospital, where here in La Grande, you know, there is emergency needs. So there's a hospital in La Grande, mm-hmm. but there is not that that specialized care that is immediately here. So when I look at La Grande, the major difference is population density, number one. But when we unpackage that and unravel it, it's access. So when I think about La Grande, we have more things in common with Frontier America than there is with rural America. For myself, you know, one of the things that I think about a lot are, how do our community members who don't have access to a car or access to travel in the winter cross over Cabbage Hill, which is this mountain separating La Grande to Pendleton and La Grande to the rest of I-84. So La Grande, if you're not familiar with it, is a high valley town where we are about 4,200 feet up. My first winter in La Grande, I remember driving around in the snow, frustrated as frustrated could be, because both directions in and out of La Grande, east or west, were closed down. Mm. And I just swearing at the Elkhorn Mountains, just because I realized for the first time in my entire life that I was geographically bound. And that is the major difference between La Grande and the Willamette Valley. So it's access, not just to travel, but access to ideas at times and access to diversity. One of the things that I think about when I go home to the valley, I think about all the different languages that I can hear when I'm in Portland or Salem or Hillsborough or Corvallis or even Eugene versus what I can hear in La Grande. I think that became very, very apparent one of the first times I made the jump into Hermiston, which is it is the largest city in Eastern Oregon. It has over 17,000 people in the city proper, but outside of Hermiston are a series of smaller towns. And so when we look at Hermiston as a larger network, something like 20 to 25,000 people from the city center. And in Hermiston, it is the largest Spanish-speaking area in Eastern Oregon.
Hmm.
And I remember going into Hermiston the very first time. So this was probably 3 months into the position at Eastern Oregon. Just was in shock and awe and in relief and in complete joy to hear Spanish being spoken, to see Spanish mercados and tiendas surrounding different neighborhoods there, and driving through the town and hearing, you know, Vietnamese being spoken. Or in La Grande, if I were to think about Eastern Oregon, less than 10% of its population as being people of color. So not a lot of different languages being spoken. In La Grande itself, we have, I want to say, 4, maybe 5 Chinese-speaking families. One of the side stories that I laugh at, there was an employee at the university who is no longer with us. And I think I was there maybe 2 weeks. And he approached me and said, "Hey, do you think we're trying to do this event? We are looking to do some relationship building and potential fundraising. Do you think you can reach out to this business owner?" I'm like, "Why do you need me to do that?" He's like, "Well, you're really good friends with him." It's like, I've only known this person for 2 weeks, maybe 10 days. They're like, "Well, you're countrymen. Can't you have that conversation with him?" And it's like, I think our conversation's done here. That was one of those incidents where in the same breath, I was deeply offended.
Mm-hmm.
But also in the same breath, one of the most blatant examples of, it's not a microaggression. I'm not sure what I would label it as. I am deeply offended that you would assume that because this person is from the same part of China. So yeah, technically, if you want to get down to the brass tacks of it, we are countrymen, but we have never met. His parents were also from Guangdong, like my parents. We both speak the same dialect of Chinese, Toisanese, and there are a lot of things that we have in common. We are probably, once upon a time, 43 generations ago, probably less than that, related at some juncture. His last name is Chen, C-H-E-N.
Oh.
My last name is Chin, C-H-I-N. Possibly somewhere, by extension, we are probably related. But the fact that this person would say, "Go and have this conversation with him because he's Chinese and you're Chinese."
Yeah, those conversations happen here in Portland. You're listening to Pacific Underground this morning. I am Jenna, one of the members of the collective of Pacific Underground. Thanks for tuning in. And guess what? You're also tuned into KBOO's holiday membership drive. Give us a call to become a member of KBOO today, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm and click that donate button up there at the top. Hey, we got a goal of $300 this hour, so help us make that goal, 877-500-5266. If you become a member today, then you will be entered into our daily drawing, and today's drawing is for $400 worth of your pick of thank you gifts from the KBOO Thank You Gift Cabinet, which includes books, CDs, t-shirts, mugs, and other KBOO merchandise. I gotta say, I've seen this cabinet. It's pretty amazing. And something else that's in that cabinet we'd like to offer you as a thank you gift, especially if you can call in and come in at that $5 a month. You don't have to get this to get the or to win the raffle in order to get this one. If you can call in at $5 a month and show your support for Pacific Underground and this type of programming, you can get a book by Stacy Tran, who was one of our featured guests just, I think, last month. Her book, A List of Herbs I Want You to Taste in My Mind in Another Language. Such good stuff. You know, one thing I really liked about that Stacy Tran interview was it's an example of just how powerful I believe that community radio is, and that you believe community radio is, because here we have people who are coming from our community. We have authors. We always feature just API folks from within the Oregon community that talk about what it is, what is their experience, whether it's through here we have like Justin Chin talking about what it is to, you know, work for a university over in Eastern Oregon, or we have Stacy Tran telling us her experience through poetry and through books. This is what Pacific Underground does. And we are empowered to do that through KBOO Community Radio, because KBOO says, hey, we want you to tell the stories from your community. And you support that. You like that you have the opportunity to hear stories from within your communities, or maybe not within your community, but to hear, wow, what is the existence here in Oregon for people of all these different diverse communities? Since you appreciate that, show your support and become a member or renew your membership today. 877-500-5266. Again, I'm going to do a little slower because, you know, we got to get out our smartphones and let's dial together. 877-500-5266 right now, or go to kboo.fm. We got some people here ready to answer your phone. Oh, your call, like, and then, hey, they're already taking it right now. Thank you very much, caller, for calling in. You know, let me just put this other thing why you should call in and join the person on the phone right now. You appreciate how, you know, KBOO keeps in mind that representation matters, that it matters to have a diversity of voices on the air, to give authentic voices that are allowed to use powerful language and powerful messaging, where we can speak to our community, we can tell our story. I'm so grateful to KBOO as a volunteer that I've had the opportunity to explore my story, to explore what is it to be API here in Oregon, and that I've got to come with my collective members, you know, together to tell that story. And every month it's so interesting because we always think, oh man, what is our story going to be this month? And we never have a shortage of stories to tell. So you appreciate hearing those stories. You know that it gives you a better depth and insight as to who is your community. Who is your community that maybe you never really thought of before? And maybe this gives you the opportunity to say, hey, our community is rich. It is so rich. Thank you, KBOO. Thank you for showing us that we're not as, you know, as Portlandy as we think. Maybe Portland is this awesome place where you can hear voices of the marginalized. Give us a call, 877-500-5266 right now, or go to kboo.fm and consider coming out, whatever you works for you. You know, maybe you can spare $10 a month right now, and if you can, we will thank you with a KBOO beanie. I'm a big fan of the beanie. It's black. It's got our new KBOO logo on it. No one has it yet because it's new for this drive. And so if you're like, hey man, I need some new KBOO swag. I totally need KBOO swag. So when I'm walking around Portland and everyone's like, hey, I know that station. That's the station that has Pacific Underground. Oh my gosh, look at that beanie. That could be you. Join me, because I'm going to be wearing the beanie. I love the beanie. I always want the beanie. I've been watching other people call in and get it. Join me. Join others and get the KBOO beanie cap. But mainly for showing your support. Make sure you're for Pacific Underground, for KBOO Community Radio. Give us a call, 877-500-5266 right now. Or go to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. So now let's get back to Pacific Underground with producer Tabitha Teo talking to Justin Chin about Eastern Oregon.
I guess that's a very interesting segue to my next question, which is, did anything surprise you about La Grande?
In ways, yes, and in ways, no. I knew coming into it that there's always going to be that stigma of Eastern Oregon being a very, very, very red part, a very conservative, and at times a very frontier culture. And I had, in a lot of ways, really opened myself up to learning why is that stereotype here. and really challenging that stereotype and wanting to know, is this truly what Eastern Oregon is? And to a large degree, no, it's not. So I've been very pleasantly surprised. Small populations and small groupings of folks who are not that stereotype. I would say for the most part, the majority of the folks in Eastern Oregon are very, very kind people, very warm people, but mm-hmm. also people who have chosen to live this type of lifestyle, where in a lot of ways it is an extreme step towards rural America, where these are people who value, like you and I would value, getting to know your neighbor, mm-hmm. value that sense of community, value that sense of safety, value that sense of tradition on a level that is a lot different from growing up in the mid Willamette Valley.
Okay. What do you think would attract APIs to LeGrand?
Tabitha, I'm really not sure how to answer that question, to tell you the truth. When I look at Asian Pacific Islanders, this is where I have to step outside of my narrative of Asian American, look at it through the lens of why do a lot of our Pacific Islanders like LeGrand? The majority of our Pacific Island students who come to LeGrand are pursuing a degree and pursuing an experience because their home islands, Federated States of Micronesia, are not going to exist anymore. The U.S. government has done a lot of things with bombing mm-hmm. and nuclear testing there, and with different changes in climate. This is where our Micronesian students are coming here as a refuge in a way. They are building a community. They're gaining skills and gaining degrees and gaining knowledge. So they're increasing social capital. They're increasing that knowledge base to take back to the islands, or in a lot of ways for a lot of our islanders who do stay are moving into areas like John Day, Oregon. John Day is a population of under 10,000. I'm not exactly sure of what the population is, but it is a very, very remote area in southeastern Oregon. It's 2.5 hours southeast of LeGrand.
Once again, lived my whole life here, never been to John Day.
John Day, let's see, majority of the people come to John Day as a stopping point between the Painted Hills or to go to the John Day fossil beds. That's really what John Day is. Eastern Oregon in itself, you know, when we look at towns like Hermiston, I can't tell you the last time that I've gone into the city to shop. I love the city. Just came back from Los Angeles a couple weeks ago. And, you know, when I was in LA, I've never felt more at home and more safe and secure in my entire life. When I tell people that, their skin crawls and there's that moment of, so really? And so when I bring that up, I love it. That pace of life is amazing to me. I always temper it with this commitment to rural America, because I truly believe that my work is, I'll put a feather in my cap. It's a part of the world where for API communities, this is not an attractive part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of API communities and families, it's just that it's staying close to home because it's safe. I'm making this realization as we go through this process here. Eastern Oregon, in a lot of ways, is that last enclave of what white America has been. Mm. It's that sense of frontier freedom. That sense of, I'm going to pull myself up by my own boots. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make my own mistakes here, but I'm going to do it the way that I understand and the way that it's been celebrated through this great American ethos.
Where do you go to find community?
Oh, in this part of the world, you build community. When I look at community, there's not a lot of there's not enough of an Asian Pacific Island population to really build a giant community within Le Grand. So it's one household to another household. It's Saturday night going over to Gina and Russell's for a blend of Hawaiian food, meeting Mexican food, meeting Chinese food. And so when I break bread with them, I'm not sure what's always going to be at the table, but something good is going to arise. Coming to Le Grand, I talked to a lot of my friends who are people of color. It's really this place where for a lot of us who have grown up in suburban towns on the fringe of larger communities, or growing up in areas where we were one of two or three families of colors. For myself, I've really grown in to discovering who I am ethnically and historically. For a lot of my Latino friends who have come from more suburban areas where they've had to become cultural and linguistic chameleons, this is that place where they say that they keep a pot of bachelor food on the stove. And so for me, there's always a pot of rice going. There is always stockpiles of tea, stockpiles of Asian spices. These are things that I didn't stockpile when I lived on the west side of the state because it's easily bought. Here, I am 5.5 hours from 82nd Street in Portland, which is the new Chinatown.
Yeah, pretty much.
When I go back to Portland, I used to always make fun of my parents growing up as a kid, and I would complain like it was going out of style. It was always, "Mom, why do we need to buy a car full of Asian groceries? Do we really need to have two ducks? Do we really need to buy Chinese pork belly? Do we really need to buy dim sum for days and days and days and days on end?" And the last time I was at home, I was with my older nephew, who is now a freshman in high school. He's like, "Justin, why do you have a giant cooler in the back of your Toyota?" I'm like, "Nathan, I'm going to say this. I used to make fun of my mom like it was going out of style. And I would complain. I would be that son complaining about our car smelling like Chinese food, our car being full of random cuts of meat, of random textures, of random boxes of dim sum piled and piled up in the car." And it was really looking at that, and I look at myself, and when I go back to the west side of Oregon, I think of it as stocking up on necessaries, things that I cannot find here, things that I cannot create out here. And so when I think about building community locally, it is building communities with folks who are transplants from other places. So it's really finding our own quote-unquote fusion food, where in the past we've, in my circle of friends, it's been, "Well, can you put this in a burrito? Can you really put Chinese barbecue pork in a burrito? And would you eat it?" And it's like, "I don't know, let's try." And so we do. And it's stumbling upon flavors, and it's stumbling upon conversations and commonalities through that lens of food.
Do you ever ask the other Asian families in the area if you for a grocery list of things that they need? And
dude, Tabitha, we call it the Great Inland Northwest Railroad System. So anytime we have a friend who is going west, whether it's one of our Chinese business owners or a student who is going west, you know, whose background is from an API community or a Latino community, it's really, "Do you think you can stop by Owajimaya? Do you think you can stop by Fubon? Do you think you can swing by Adong Market?" We're there in Salem, that is right in your backyard and my backyard. And it's, you know, cash on delivery. And see those pieces, those transmissions from the west. Actually, I just made a trip up to Pasco, Washington, which has a small Asian market, not a whole lot in the store. And I may have bought $150 worth of White Rabbit candies in one fell swoop for four different students who are needing that fix of Asian America.
What you were saying about how your mom would load up the car whenever y'all went to Portland, totally nodding along because my family would also do that. I would always think, like, why don't we just go to Roth's IGA or Fred Meyer, or what's wrong with shopping there? And of course, it's one of those things I didn't appreciate till I was older. It's like, oh, because you can't buy those things at American grocery stores.
Exactly. Exactly. One of my friends, actually, Russell, him and his wife, we cook a lot together. There's a store here in LeGrand, and there's chains of it. It's a chain store, but it's really one of those markets where it's catch as catch can. So it's called Grocery Outlet Bargain Market. It's one of my favorite stores. When it's there, you have to stock up. So there was probably a chunk of time for 3 months where, for some magical reason, Grocery Outlet Bargain Market found this honey pot of Redondo's Portuguese sausage. And Redondo's Portuguese sausage is a very Hawaiian-based linguiça. Mm. And so for Russell and I, who do a ton of fusion cooking, it's something that we will make fried rice with, chow mein with, anything. And so there was a point of time where it was between Russell and I, we probably bought every stick of Redondo's hot sausage in Union County in the span of 3 months. They're like, did you want us? And it's like, yes, we'll take it all. If you have any in the back, we'll take it all. And so when I look at those pieces that way, Tabitha, oh my gosh. The last time I was in Portland, I looked at myself in the rearview mirror of my car and I just smelt chashu bao. And I looked at a wad of cash that was once in my wallet that had magically disappeared. And I looked at the receipt and I realized, yes, I've become a Chinese grandma. And yes, I did order 10 orders of chashu bao. So there is no urbanite who would ever imagine buying 30 chashu bao in one sitting. But I did my due diligence and I took 30 chashu bao across I-84 into LeGrand, Oregon. And then, that was this guy.
And then made your rounds to all your friends and family, and here you go.
Well, I wouldn't say all of them made it to friends and family.
But all of this program is making it to you, friends and family. Good morning. My name is Sam. I am so pleased and privileged to join my good friend, Jenna Yokoyama.
Good morning.
Here on KBOO for our holiday drive, the little mini drive. We're just taking a few days. We're going to spend a few days reminding you what it takes to keep KBOO, something like KBOO, happening, because KBOO does not sell your attention, your ear holes to advertisers. KBOO exists only to bring you what you need to be a fully informed and well-rounded citizen of your community. Jenna was speaking earlier about representation, and as someone who does not identify with the API community, either in Portland Metro or in Eastern Oregon or in anywhere in the world, I realize I have no idea what White Rabbit is. I have no idea what chashu bao is, awesome. And I have no idea why 30 is a lot of chashu bao. And I just kind of phonetically wrote it out because I have no idea what it is. But dig this, Tabitha does know. Jenna does know. So Justin didn't have to interrupt his whole spiel, mm-hmm. his whole rap there to explain it to someone who had no idea, who has no connection to his community. That is representation. And that is why representation mm-hmm. matters, because people I've spoken to a lot of people in a lot of different communities, and one thing I hear from so many of them is how sick to death they are of having to explain everything to people like me. And so this is why it's so important to have people like Jenna and Tabitha and all the rest of the Pacific Underground crew on a to have an electronic media presence in the Portland Metro. And that's why you support it, because you find it important to have that for those communities. Maybe you are a member of that community and you so love hearing something and you already know what it is, and you don't have to sit around and wait for some clueless white person to finally get it. Call right now, 877-500-5266. I apologize taking so much time explaining why you support it, and I didn't tell you how. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm/give. Jenna.
Oh, Sam. We appreciate Sam so much. He's on our board off for our show, and he's just so supportive of it. And yeah, you know, that it's so true. When I heard the white rabbit comment, I just started laughing because I knew exactly what that was. Yeah, if I took 30 Chashu Bao out to Eastern Oregon, most of my friends wouldn't make it either. So, you know, this is what I love about KBOO. KBOO encourages us to use language where we are talking to our communities and to speak authentically, because we know that our community wants to hear it and that people want to hear us speaking from our voice. So thank you, KBOO, for supporting that. You support that. You want the kind of programming that speaks to you intelligently. So become a member. Continue your support. 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and click the donate button. Come on in and I'll give you some white rabbit candy. There you go. Back to Pacific Underground.
Aren't inviting you over to eat. Where do you go to eat?
We cook in home. That's what we do. So we will talk story and we will cook and talk story as we go. So, for example, last Super Bowl, it was one of the most amazing hodgepodges of Asian, island, and Mexican food known to man. So, same table, homemade tamales, Hawaiian style lo mein, Chinese five spice on hot wings, and fried rice, all at the same table.
Wow.
And it was the most beautiful things ever. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, I looked at it with Russell and Gina. I'm like, this is America. This is America. They're like, oh my God, Justin, it truly is America. And it's like, and we're doing it Mulan style, AKA Disney's Mulan, beef, pork, chicken.
I know college campuses can sometimes be its own, like, insulating little community and bubble in a town. Do you find that the POC students just stay on campus, or do you think they feel part of the larger LeGrand community?
You know, that's a really good question, Tabitha, and I've been waiting for you to ask that. And I'm going to say for the majority of our students, they are pretty isolated. And that's unfortunate in a lot of ways, but that's something that's part of that experience for a lot of our students of color that they have to go through. That's part of that unfortunate trial by fire. I could give you a million and one examples of times where students have been in conflict, where students have experienced microaggressions. And I can see from my own experiences as a professional of color, where probably for the first 18 months of my life in LeGrand, it was a variation of, so what are you? Where are you from? No, really, where are you from? I have to look at it and give people the benefit of the doubt. It's hard and it's exhausting at times explaining, this is who I am, this is where I'm from. And they're like, no, really, what are you? Where are you from? It's like, I'm not sure what you're really wanting.
Do you think the international students, they understand when they experience a microaggression or some blatant, ignorant question?
Tabitha, you know, that's another question that's really hard-hitting, and I'm glad you're asking that. For a lot of our international students who come from European countries, they are viewed as, oh, you have such a wonderful accent. Tell me more about France. eyes fawning, where for our students from China and Japan and from the Middle East and from Africa, in a lot of ways, they're really viewed as almost kind of a novelty, where students and community members look at them and accept them in a lot of ways, but at the same time are looking at them as almost, well, I hate to say it, something very foreign and something to be observed. And from my experience, at times, there's a lot of cross-cultural communication. There's a lot of conflicts in communication styles and work habits.
What are the API relationships with the other POC groups, especially with the Native American groups?
I think in a lot of ways there are great relations amongst the POCs. Part of it is that shared reality is like, wow, we are strangers in a strange land. Not that they're coming to LeGrand per se, that's part of it, but I think a lot of it is a lot of our POC students are strangers in a strange land because they're coming from first generation households where a lot of our students are the first in their family to go and pursue a higher education degree. When I look at our campus, a lot of the issues that we have with our students of color are not just cultural differences between ethnicities, but that cultural difference of I am first generation from Salem, Oregon. I went to McKay High School. It's a school of almost 2,500 students. It is one of the most diverse high schools in the state of Oregon. And here I am coming to a campus where there are other students whose parents have college degrees, who have been very successful. For some of our students who are coming from more urban areas, it's that shift of, holy smokes, for the first time, I'm realizing what it is to be a student of color in a very, very, very small campus.
And we'll hear more of that in a little bit. For now, I'm Sam. I'm back on the air with you, coming at you in 2D.
During a holiday membership drive?
Yes, with...
I'm Jenna, a member of the Pacific Underground Collective, the show you are currently listening to. We have a goal of $300 this hour for our show, so give us a call, 877-500-5266 right now, or go online to kboo.fm. We got some people to thank, so who gave online at kboo.fm, and they clicked on that donate button. We have John from California.
Dang. Say what?
That's right. We go outside of Oregon. We got Tamara from Southeast Portland. Oh, yeah, we got to get a couple dings. Thank you so much. And Linda from Southwest Portland has given online this morning. You can join them. It only takes a couple minutes to go online and become a member of KBOO. Or, you know, if you're like, hey, I would like to talk to a human being and have some connection and have a little chit chat this morning, 877-500-5266.
And when you call that number, which is 877-500-5266, one more time for those of you who didn't have an implement and something to write on prepared. You got it? You ready? 877-500-5266. That's the number you're going to start dialing. For the rest of you, I'm going to remind you that you hear more programs at Center on Local Arts and Culture on KBOO than on any other outlet. And that is worth something to you. How much? I guess we'll find out when you call 877-500-5266 and you ask the friendly volunteer who takes your call at 877-500-5266.
I'm gonna put
to help you set up a monthly draft automatically from from the checking account you have at your local in-town community credit union, and they'll tell you how you can tell your financial institution to send KBOO, say, $10 each month on your behalf. It's easy. It's painless. I'll tell you how easy it is and how convenient. People have called me. Well, I've answered phones. I've been the friendly volunteer taking your calls at 877 800-500-5266 and taking calls from monthly supporters who want to increase the amount of their monthly donation. You can do that too. Folks who are already on a monthly deal, call up right now, 877-500-5266, and just bump it up by a dollar or two. And I've taken calls from folks who want to do that, but they don't know what the current amount is. They literally do not know because it's so convenient. It's so painless. It's so easy. They don't even know how much it is. So what I have to tell them is, okay, I'll tell my friends in the membership department and in finance that however much it is right now, increase it by $2 a month. And they're like, yeah, thank you very much. And I say, thank you. Stay tuned. Yeah, there's lots more coming. And there is lots more coming because your friends and neighbors have answered the call by making the call. Calling what? 877-500-5266. There are some folks who don't care to have 2-minute conversations with another human being. They prefer to go to the easy, convenient, and secure web form at kboo.fm/give. And in roughly the same amount of time, maybe a little less, they have their deal all done. How are you going to do it? Well, we won't know until you do it. kboo.fm. Click on the little maroon rectangle that says donate in yellow letters, or call right now. 877, what's the rest of it?
500-5266.
That's right.
And you know, one reason why maybe okay, I'm just put it this way. I'm going to make an appeal to people who are listening who are from the ABI community, because this is why actually the Pacific Underground community, why we come together, our collective, and we say, hey, let's make stories and let's do interviews for our community. And maybe other people will listen. But, you know, as a collective, we've really appreciated KBOO giving us this space because, you know, when I first moved to Portland, I said, where's my community? I wonder, where is my voice? And I, you know, turn on to KBOO and there was our voices. There was our community speaking to our community, authentically to ourselves. And I said, oh, we're here. I didn't see myself in Portland, but then I did. I heard myself on KBOO, and then I went on KBOO and literally put my voice onto KBOO Community Radio. And that's so important to realize that a little radio show, you think, oh, this is a once a month radio show. Actually, we're a twice a month radio show now. Who is listening? Well, it's you. It's you who needs to hear your community, who needs to hear your own voice coming through, because representation matters. So show your support for that. 877-500-5266 right now to help us make our goal, or go online to kboo.fm. Now let's get back to the last part of Pacific Underground.
I have one final question, and this is more just, this is a very fluffy Oregonian to Oregonian question. How much does it bother you when someone mispronounces Oregon?
Oh my God. When someone mispronounces Oregon, it is, it hurts, but it's also that conversation piece where Oregon, 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 it's like, no, it's Oregon. And it's always, what is the background of it? It's like, well, the history books say it's got a French influence, but it's probably based off of a very anglicized or francified version of a native term. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, it kills me, but at the other point, I look at this and it's a fluffy question, it's a fluffy response. Oregon is a very, very special state. It is a state that is unlike any other. It is a state with two very, very, very distinct political climates in so many ways. It is a land of immigrants, whether they came over in the recent past on boats or planes or here in La Grande. I've got roots back to the Oregon Trail. We are the original settlers of Oregon. It's like, so what about these people in this area that's called Umatilla, or this area that's outside of what you currently call Joseph? Talk to me about that. So it is a land of immigrants. Mm-hmm. We celebrate it on via 8-bit and Oregon Trail. You know, we look at it those ways, in so many ways. So when I look at people mispronouncing Oregon, it's a conversation starter. So it's an in. When I look at people here in LeGrand, LeGrand is a French word, Le Grand. I can't even pronounce it, but it means the big, the beautiful. So when we look at folks here in LeGrand, even people who have been in LeGrand their whole entire life, they will say, oh, it's, you know, originally it's pronounced LeGrande, the big. It's Spanish. I'm like, no. Not really. So I like to create up my own little alternative history, and I like to call Union County the jumping off point of the three major colonizers of the 1800s, the French, the English, and the Spanish. So in Le Grand, formerly pronounced Le Grand, it was founded by, in my alternative history, the Hudson's Bay Trapping Company. And then Union, the town over, was founded by a British trading company, and Elgin, spelled E-L-G-I-N, was founded in the 1300s by an offshoot brand of the conquistadors, and originally Elgin was pronounced Elgin, and Union, Oregon is where they would have their roundup days, where they would trade amongst the three European colonizers. And so I lie in my alternative history, and I say that it was due to the close of the beaver trapping trade where Union County really popped on to become the elk pelt capital of the world, the new fashion trend in the haute couture houses of London, as the beaver hat was being replaced by the elk hide hoodie. It never really flew off the market.
That was producer Tabitha Teo speaking to Justin Chin, Career Services Director at Eastern Oregon University in Le Grand, Oregon.
You've been listening to Pacific Underground. Pacific Underground is Kanan Schlesinger, Tabitha Teo, V. Pham, Jake Vermas, Kat Patuigas, and me, Jenny Yokoyama.